breed, breed, books, books. Breed, breed, books, books. Breed, breed, books, books. Hold them in your hand, and you'll hippity, hoppity, clippity, cloppity off to a different land.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and I get to do book picks this week. We have a family of independent booksellers throughout the region. Representatives of each store come weekly Tuesdays, and this week it is time to talk with Phil Lewis, owner of the Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont. Good morning, Phil. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Where do you want to begin today?
First up is In the Lobby of the Dream Hotel by Genevieve Plunkett. Bennington author Genevieve Plunkett has a new book coming out in August. Her last book, Prepare Her, a collection of short stories, was very well received. One New York Times critic likened Plunkett's writing to that of Shirley Jackson. Her latest book, In the Lobby of the Dream Hotel, is a novel. Portia and Nathan first meet in a cafe. Portia has just been released from the regional psychiatric hospital. Indeed, she's still wearing the plastic identity bracelet she was issued with upon admission. They bump into each other buying coffee, strike up a conversation. Now, years later, they're married, if not settled, and have a 7-year-old son, Julian. There have been some good times and some bad, and Portia is now secretly off her medication. She can't hear the music anymore, is how she justifies not taking her meds. She is, after all, a member of a band, and being able to hear the music is all important. Poor Alice, they call themselves. It's Carrie on guitar, Theo on drums, and Portia on the electric guitar. Oh, and Portia is slowly falling in love with Theo. Nathan is a controlling husband and feels threatened by Portia's reawakening and the time she spends with the band, with Theo. When he discovers Portia's stash of unused meds, he confronts her, convincing her that she's having a breakdown and needs to commit herself to the psychiatric hospital once again. In the Lobby of the Dream Hotel is like a kaleidoscope, with shifting patterns and scintillating colours. The language sparkles as Plunkett conjures up remarkable scenes and images, many of them so beautifully realised that I had to read them again. Here's the sample. Theo existed to Portia the same way the old theatre existed, in a way that was comforting and a little intriguing, but easily taken for granted. In the Lobby of the Dream Hotel is released in August. We'll be having an event with Genevieve to celebrate, so do check out our website and Facebook page.
That's Genevieve Plunkett's upcoming new novel, In the Lobby of the Dream Hotel. Sounds wonderful.
It's very interesting, yeah. Next up, The Half Moon by Mary Beth Keane. They say you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, and I'm not. But I did want to remark on the cover of The Half Moon. It pictures a full moon torn in half, the halves slipped apart, and the space between them forming the silhouettes of two faces looking away from each other. It's really well done.
It is. Good use of negative space.
There we go. Anyway, on to the book. Mm-hmm. Middle age has caught up with Malcolm Geffert and his wife Jess, knocked them off their feet and left them asking, what's life about? What's the point of it all? Is there any meaning? Malcolm has worked at the Half Moon all his life, it seems. First as a bartender, then, when the owner retires and Malcolm stretches to buy the bar from him, as the debt-ridden landlord. But the bar is his heart and soul. It's the life he loves. The love of his life. Or is that Jess, his wife, who's just moved in with her lover? Jess and Malcolm have tried hard for children, but as she ages, Jess feels that the possibility of motherhood is slipping from her. Is this why she moves in with Neil, a widower with two children? Malcolm bought the bar from the shady Hugh Lydon. It was a mate's deal, too good to be true, which, of course, it was, if you read the fine print, something Malcolm had neglected to do. Now the repayments are crippling him and the Half Moon is slowly dying. The events in the Half Moon take place over a very eventful week. One of the bar's regular customers goes missing and a blizzard paralyzes the small town, freezing things in place for a short period. It gives the townspeople time to reflect on how they came to be where they are and to consider what's really important in life. Mary Beth Keane's novel deftly explores the disappointments that trigger a midlife crisis. It's well written and the characters are generously realized. I liked both Jess and Malcolm and wanted things to work out for them. You'll have to read the book to find out if they do.
The Half Moon by Mary Beth Keane. Next.
Next up is Tom Lake by Anne Patchett. Anne Patchett's latest book, to be released in August, has two timelines, linked by the characters in them. The book opens with the major protagonist, Laura Kennison, helping out with auditions for a play to be performed at the local theatre. At the last minute, Laura throws her hat into the ring and is selected for one of the key roles. She's a natural, and a Hollywood producer, in town to see a performance by his niece, snaps up Laura for a role in his latest film. Along the way, Laura loses a ewe to become Lara. The second time sees Lara married to Joe with three daughters, Emily, Maisie and Nell, on their family farm in northern Michigan. Emily lives on the farm, but Maisie and Nell have returned home to help with the harvest. The cherries need to be picked before they rot. Bone tired one night, they select a movie, Popcorn King, one of their favourites, starring the Hollywood heartthrob Peter Duke. Joe, ostensibly on his way out to the barn to get things ready for the next day's harvest, casually drops a bombshell into the conversation. "You know your mother used to date him," he says, before tactfully retreating to the safety of the barn. The girls are struck dumb, it seems, before bursting into a myriad of questions. "Why haven't you mentioned this before?" they want to know. And so the story unfolds, with Laura telling her daughters about a summer residence at a theatre near Tom Lake. We alternate between the two times, with Laura telling her daughters about her summer as they harvest the cherries in the seemingly endless orchard. Sometimes they get so caught up in Laura's past that they forget the present. For me, Tom Lake is Anne Patchett at the top of her form. It's a remarkable novel, warm and wise and witty. There's real love here. Love born of knowing someone inside and out and understanding, accepting, celebrating and cherishing that person. But there's much more. There's respect, too, for people and places. This is a special book.
Anne Patchett's Tom Lake will be published in August. It sounds just beautiful. I can't wait to check it out.
It is a special read.
Wonderful. Next.
Let Us Descend by Jesmyn Ward. Jesmyn Ward's latest book, Let Us Descend, will be released in October. It's a long wait, but well worth it. The book opens on a plantation in the Carolinas. It's the Old South, a time of slavery. Annis and her mother are owned. Life is a dreary drudge, with unending work and never enough to eat. Hunger bites constantly. Violence hovers, then lashes out for the smallest crumb pilfered. But there's rebellion in their hearts. At night, Annis's mother takes her into the woods and reveals the secrets of their ancestors, their history, and their spirit saviour, Asa. Annis's mother is sold south. Then, when Annis's youthful beauty catches the eye of the sire, she, too, is sold south. We accompany her on the grueling march to the slave markets of New Orleans, as does Asa. Annis is bought by a woman who owns a sugar plantation. She is assigned to work in the house with Esther and Mary, but, come harvest, everyone is called to the fields. The woman's husband is away in the city, where he's rumoured to have a mistress. He returns one day, sick with fever. Annis is sent to the woods to find healing herbs. She returns with mushrooms, some healing, some deadly, and brews a broth. We're never quite sure whether she uses the healing mushrooms or the deadly ones. Regardless, the man is dead the next day, and Annis is cast into the punishment hole. The punishment hole is a pit lined with pointed stakes, so that whomever is locked in there, for whatever infringement, cannot hold down to take the strain off tired limbs, but is forced to squat until released at the whim of the owner. A and so we say, and so we descend. Ward says of her book, "It's difficult to walk south with Alice. Her narrative descends from one hellscape to another. But I promise you that if you come with me, you will rise. It will be worth the work, worth the walking." Let Us Descend is not an easy read, but it is a rewarding read. Ward's language is powerful and well-tuned. Alice is a light that shines. It's well worth taking the walk with her.
Let Us Descend by Jesmyn Ward, coming out in October.
Okay. Last up today is The Peacock and the Sparrow by I.S. Berry. The Peacock and the Sparrow takes its title from one of the stories in The Arabian Nights. The moral of the original story is that even when you take all the precautions, you cannot run from your destiny. And that's certainly the case for Shane Collins, an embittered CIA spy on his final tour before retirement. He's based in Bahrain. His mission to uncover suspected Iranian support for militant movement bent on deposing the monarchy. One evening, bombs go off near the Western Enclave. How many explosions were there? Four? Five? A slip of the tongue from an investigating police officer leads Collins to believe the explosions were set off by forces within the government, with the intention of implicating the Shia minority. Protests in the streets are brutally suppressed and curfews imposed. Collins's main informant is Naqid, a shady character who claims to be a member of the insurgency intent on undermining the state. Collins and Nadiq visit an underground workshop one evening. The workshop is building IEDs, improvised explosive devices. Nadiq wants to prove that the weapons are being manufactured locally and that there is no Iranian involvement. Okay.
No, you're fine. Sorry. Go ahead.
At a culture event, Collins meets the featured artist, the beautiful Almaisa. Collins becomes infatuated and pursues her relentlessly. But who is this elusive woman really? What are her beliefs? And where do her loyalties lie? Collins suspects her of also being involved with his boss, the inexperienced and obsequious Whitney. Oh, what a tangled web. I.S. Berry spent 6 years as an operations officer with the CIA, and it shows in her attention to the detail of spycraft. She also spent 2 years in Bahrain during the Arab Spring, and this experience adds colour to her depiction of that city-state. This is Berry's first novel, but she has a real grip on the plot and the characters. The Peacock and the Sparrow has all the coded messages, secret drop boxes, clandestine meetings and double and triple agents you'd expect from a John le Carré spy novel. And all the shifting loyalties, jealous rivals and cruel betrayals you'd expect of Graham Greene. Although spy novels are not my go-to genre, I thoroughly enjoyed this book. It's a very fine read.
The Peacock and the Sparrow by I.S. Berry. All of the books on Phil's list are posted on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. For more information on the Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont, you can go to their website, benningtonbookshop.com. Phil, thank you so much for sharing your list with us. Thank you for this just excellent suggestions, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
Once again, benningtonbookshop.com, and the list is posted at wamc.org. We'll be back with more after this. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.